Not going to do it as a round. We're just going to do it. It looks like we may have a small congregation, so we'll just do it twice. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Okay, the last one we're going to practice is 1059, May Your Life Be a Song,
in the teal
hymnal. Do that one. Rachel, could we do that again? We need a little practice.
See something?
No, wait.
On the
cord.
On the cord.
On the cord.
Oh, here it is, right here.
She's got it.
It's not lighting.
Switch.
I am. It's not lighting.
Do we? It might not be. No. See? God, electricity is so amazing, isn't it?
I mean, it has to be plugged in.
Jeez, I know. Oh, let there be light. Woo!
Here's your announcement.
Four and a half.
Forever.
Ready when you want to.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Dee Evans. Welcome to this place. This is a home where there are no revealed truths that are promoted. No scripture or human being is accepted as infallible. This is a place for searching for truth. But we are believers. We believe in intellectual freedom. We believe in justice. We believe in compassion and concern for each other and for the whole world. We believe in a commitment to these ideals, which make us caring and active in the struggles for human dignity. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer my welcome to all of you, and in particular to those who are here for the first time. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your hymnal and place it in an offering plate or give it to an usher. We'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on at this church. We welcome you and we encourage you to join us for worship, after worship, for coffee and for conversation. And that's, you'll see everybody go through this door, just follow them. Information about the church is available from pamphlets during the coffee hour and from any of the people gathered here. We are glad that you are here and we hope to see you again. In the pulpit today is Robin Berkeley. Robin has been a member of this church for 4.5 years. And she is also a professor at SIUE. Okay, announcements. Is this echoing? No? Okay. This is an announcement from Robin. Thank you for all who helped with the house build in East St. Louis. Mary and Jerry Johnson, Spiral, Kathleen McKeever, and Nancy and Pat, who helped make food, please come join us next year. So it's a big thank you to everyone. The other announcement we have is in the newsletter, there was a request to clean off the front of the front porch and to have it wiped down with bleach. So if any hardy person would like to get this done, have at it. We really do need this done, sincerely. It needs to be cleaned off. I guess you can take your own initiative. I just am making the announcement. The front porch, right outside the back doors of the church. We begin our service this morning with a prelude. Our call to worship today is from Psalm 133. How rare it is, how lovely this fellowship of those who meet together. As Jerry Johnson lights our chalice, please join me in reciting the words that you will see on the wall. We light this chalice, symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us of the divine spark in all of creation and power of love to heal what is broken and to be grateful for life's blessings. Thank you. Please rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing hymn 103. We are not going to make it around, but we are going to sing it twice.
Everybody, give yourself a hand.
It's your time.
Oh, it's my time. Yay.
Okay. The story that I'd like to read today is called The Fisherman and His Wife, and it's based on an Aesop's fable, but it's been retold and illustrated by a woman named Rachel Isadora, sort of in an African frame of mind. And I'll find the front page here. Okay. Long ago, there was a fisherman who lived with his wife in a pigsty by the sea. One day, the fisherman caught an unusually large flounder. "Please spare my life. I am not a fish, but an enchanted prince," the flounder begged. Surprised that the fish could speak, the fisherman let him go. When the fisherman arrived home, his wife asked for the fish that she would cook for dinner. The fisherman told her about the flounder. "Did you not wish for anything before you let him go?" she asked. "What could I possibly wish for?" the fisherman said. "We live in a place that is small and stinks," pigsty. "Go tell the enchanted flounder I want a hut," the wife insisted. The sea was stirring when the fisherman returned. "Flounder, my wife has a wish," he called out. "What is it?" the flounder asked as he swam near the shore. "A hut," the fisherman answered. "Go then, she has it already," the flounder said. When the fisherman arrived home, his wife said, "Husband, isn't this much better?" "Yes," the fisherman answered, "now we will be happy." And they were for a few days until the wife said, "This hut is still too small. Go, husband, and tell the flounder I want a stone castle." The fisherman knew this was not right, but he did not want to argue. Smart guy. So he went. The sea was green and murky when the fisherman called to the flounder that his wife had another wish. "What does she want now?" the flounder asked. "Alas, she wants a stone castle," the fisherman called. "Go then, she has it already," the flounder said. When the fisherman arrived home, his wife asked, "Is this not beautiful?" "Yes," the fisherman said. "Now let us be content." The following morning, the wife decided, "We should be king of all the land." It gets better, wait. "But I don't want to be king," the fisherman said. "Then I will be. Go tell the flounder I must be king," the wife said. So the fisherman left with a heavy heart. The sea was dark and frothy when the fisherman called to the flounder that his wife had yet another wish. "What does she want now?" the flounder asked. "To be king," the fisherman said, frightened. "Go home, she's king," the flounder said. The fisherman went home and said, "Now, wife, there is nothing more to wish for." She says, "I am king, and you are nothing but my husband. Go tell the flounder I want to be emperor over all the lands," the wife ordered. The sea was black and boiled up from deep below. The fisherman trembled when he called to the flounder. "What does she want now?" the flounder asked. "To be emperor," the fisherman called. "Go, she is emperor," the flounder called back. The wife was emperor. "Are you not satisfied now?" the fisherman asked. "No," the wife said, "I am emperor, but now I want to be pope." A little hard, but okay. That's what it says. That's where it is. "Go immediately and tell the flounder." The sea roared as it rose higher and higher. The fisherman was very afraid when he called out to the flounder. "What does she want now?" the flounder asked. "To be pope," the fisherman answered. "She is pope," the flounder shouted. When the fisherman arrived home, he said, "Wife, you are pope. Now let well enough alone." But as the sun rose in the morning sky, the wife said, "I want to be God. Go tell the flounder at once." The fisherman was horrified. "I cannot ask the flounder to do this," he begged. The wife fell into a rage, and so the fisherman left. The sea rose with waves as high as mountains when the fisherman called out. "What does she want now?" the flounder shouted. "She wants to be God," the fisherman cried out. "Go to her," the flounder called. When the fisherman arrived home, there was the old pigsty, and beside it was his wife. And that is where the fisherman and his wife lived out from that day on. It's a powerful story. It's kind of cute, too.
Wow. That gives us something to think about while we come up and do joys and concerns. I invite you to come forward to share your joys and concerns by placing stones here in our water bowl. Stones are below the bowl. Take them to represent your joys and concerns. Please come up this aisle and return by that one back to your seat. as we think about everyone who came forward, we think about the people who did not come forward. We know we all have our own joys and our own concerns. So let us breathe right now. Breathe in. And as you breathe in contentment and peace. When you breathe in slowly with a smile. Then breathe out, and when you breathe out, send love and peace to everyone in this room. Breathe in contentment and peace, and breathe it in with a smile. And feel that contentment and peace go from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. Now concentrate on breathing out. And send peace and love to everyone in this room and everyone in your community. However you represent that, just concentrate on sending peace and love out. Breathe in one last time, concentrating on your in-breath, and breathe in peace and contentment, feeling it in your entire body. Concentrate on your out-breath now and send peace and love to the entire world. With every out-breath. Now concentrate on feeling your feet on the floor, your back against the pew, and open your eyes if you have them closed, and place yourself back into this room. And take home with you all the joys and concerns of everyone here. We each receive from this church the opportunity to explore meaning, purpose, and value in our lives. How does the money you give reflect what you receive? As you give to our plate this morning, you are invited to consider how your spiritual life, that life of meaning and value and purpose, are enhanced through your giving. This morning's offering will be gratefully received. May it be joyfully given. Thank you.
Thank you.
please join in reciting the offering blessing to the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community. We dedicate ourselves and these our blessings. Right. So I have another reading in alignment with our little fisherman's story. This one's called Letting Go of Attachment from A to Zen. And the author of this is from a blog, Lori Deshane, from a blog called Tiny Buddha. And she starts with a quote from the Dalai Lama. Most of our troubles are due to our passionate desire for and attachment to things that we misapprehend as enduring entities. And she goes on to say, if there's one thing we all have in common, it's that we want to feel happy. And on the other side of that coin, we want to avoid hurting. Very utilitarianism, right? Yet we consistently put ourselves in situations that set us up for pain. We pin our happiness to people and to circumstances and things and hold on to them for dear life. We stress about the possibility of losing them when something seems amiss. Then we melt into grief when something changes, a layoff, a breakup, a transfer. We attach to feelings as if they define us, and ironically, not just positive ones. If you've wallowed in regret or disappointment for years, it can seem safe and even comforting to suffer. And trying to hold on to what's familiar, we limit our ability to experience joy in the present. A moment can't possibly radiate fully when you're suffocating it in fear. When you stop trying to grasp, own, and control the world around you, you give it the freedom to fulfill you without the power to destroy you. That's why letting go is so important. Letting go is letting happiness in. It's no simple undertaking to let go of attachment, not a one-time decision like pulling off a Band-Aid. Instead, it's a day-to-day, moment-to-moment commitment that involves changing the way you experience and interact with everything you instinctively want to grasp. The best approach is to start simple at the beginning and work your way to Zen. So I'm going to take you through a little alphabetical list, but I won't get too detailed. A, accept the moment for what it is. B, believe now is enough. C, call yourself out when you veer towards attachment. D, define yourself in fluid terms because we are all growing and evolving. E, enjoy now fully. F, friend yourself. G, go it alone sometimes. H, hold those you love lightly. I, interact with lots of people. J, justify less. K, no, you can't change the past. L, love instead of fear. M, make now count. N, narrate your stories of the past calmly. O, open your mind. P, practice letting things be. Q, question your attachment to a specific outcome. R, release the need to know. S, serve your purpose now. T, teach others. U, understand that pain is unavoidable. V, vocalize your feelings. W, write it down and then let it go. X, xi xi, which is thank you in Chinese, and it means basically to embrace your happy moments. Y, yield to peace. And Z, zen your now. Experience, appreciate, enjoy, and let go to welcome another experience. It won't always be easy. Sometimes you'll feel compelled to attach yourself physically and mentally to people and ideas as if it gives you some sense of control or security. You may even strongly believe you'll be happy if you struggle to hold on to what you have, and that's okay because it's human nature. Just know you have the power to choose from moment to moment how you experience things you enjoy. with a sense of ownership, anxiety, and fear, or with a sense of freedom, peace, and love. So the most important question now is, what do you choose right now? All right, so today's story and reading both focused on the idea of needs versus wants. When I started to do some research for today's sermon, I noticed that so much of the material on the topic was targeted to teaching children the difference between the two. Anybody who teaches, you know, in the K-12 arena knows that there's a lot of kids that really struggle with the difference between a need and a want. Needs are things that we need to survive. Wants are things we desire, but aren't necessary for survival. There are all these wonderful worksheets on teaching kids the differences, and it's challenging for them at first, but in the end, they start to get the notion of what should be a priority and what should be set aside because it's just not necessary. As adults, we know this lesson, but it can easily be forgotten. I get caught up in all sorts of things I believe are needs, which are really most likely to be wants that have run amok. And take caffeine, for example. We jokingly say, I need a cup of coffee, but in reality, it's a want because it's become an addiction. Our body's addicted to it. So the caffeine has made us need our morning jolt instead of wanting that morning jolt. Needs versus wants are also problematic as we immerse ourselves in a consumer economy. And I researched this topic more, I was not surprised to see that many of the lessons that are targeted to adults focused on fiscal responsibility, understanding and recognizing the importance of delayed gratification and saving for the future. We're all guilty of this at some level or another, and I know for me in my youth, I ran up immense credit card debt, which I'm still paying for today, because buying things became a substitute for finding my own happiness inside of me. I spent so much time outwardly focused on others and keeping up with the Joneses and things that I neglected my own inner being and my own inner health. And then I found Buddhism and also found a career that really meant a lot to me. Teaching human behavior, although it's in a business context, still resonates for me. So many of the foundational theories of psychology and philosophy can be applied to that microcosm of humanity called business that in many ways I feel like I relate much more to psychologists and philosophers than I do to the economists and accountants in my discipline. As you saw from today's reading, Buddhism also addresses needs versus wants. The great insight of the Buddha is that attachment to things that we want causes great suffering for humanity. When and only when we can focus simply on the here and the now and what we need versus what we want will we approach full enlightenment. And that's not an easy journey, because it's a journey, right? It's a practice. We have a lifetime to get there, so it really isn't surprising if we trip and fall a bit on that way. I was thrilled to have the opportunity to give today's sermon, and after I was asked, I asked around to a few people about what our congregation fundamentally needed right now to hear. What are we yearning for at a deep level as a community? We've been through lots of changes, and we've heard sermons, you know, on that topic, including one from me last summer as we sort of began this transition away from one minister and moving towards another. And so that kind of felt like a hands-off topic. And we've also had a strong focus on social justice, one of our key values, as well as that of Pastor Sunshine. And so I asked, what do we need right now? And one person said profoundly, a reminder of our connection as a community. The importance of our need to remember that no matter what happens, we are a community and we need each other more than ever. This person also asked, isn't there some sort of hierarchy of needs? Isn't community a part of that? And then I had this light bulb moment. Thank you, Maslow. It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. This idea came together pretty easily for me then, particularly since my partner today, Dee Evans, is both a Buddhist and a psychologist, so that made it a win-win. So we put our heads together and ran with the idea. So I'm going to start a little bit with Maslow, give you some psychology 101 and a little having fun and learning something approach to things. Maslow basically says there's five primary needs that every human being has, and they start with the very basic needs for survival, the idea of physiological needs like food and water and shelter, clean air, the ability to sleep, which I didn't do much of last night. So definitely not my physiological needs met today. But I did have caffeine, so Safety and security comes next. This idea that we can have health and employment and stability in the way that we live, and having family and property and a place to call our own. And then there's love and belonging, right? The community, the idea that we have families and our families are connected at some level. And family isn't always just defined by that nuclear family. This is a family right here. Self-esteem. Now we're getting into what Maslow would call the higher order needs, right? Things that we need for ourselves and we wish for in others, obviously. This idea of that we're confident and respectful of others and differences, that we allow uniqueness and our own ideas and pathways to be there, and that we feel confident and comfortable in expressing those ideas and those needs. And then lastly, self-actualization. This is where we develop a strong sense of morality, that we become more creative, that we have a purpose in our life, a greater purpose, and that we reach our full potential as individuals. And while I won't get into, you know, Maslow's ideas of how all these mechanisms work, but the bottom line is, I think you can understand at the base of that pyramid, if those things are not being met, it's hard, not impossible, but it's hard to be fully actualized. It's hard to have self-esteem. It's hard to even feel like you belong when there's no food on the table, there's no clean air, there's no water to drink. So, now that we have this basic understanding of what these needs are, I'm going to take us through our UU values. I want to show you how our seven principles really relate to this hierarchy of needs, because it's pretty profound and pretty strong as I started digging into this. Number one is the inherent worth and dignity of every person, or as the kids would say, each person is important. At no surprise to us, every level of Maslow's hierarchy resonates with this principle. When we work with our returning prisoners, or we feed and provide personal care items to our Fourth Saturday guests, we're meeting the physiological and safety and security needs of those individuals. We helped winterize Spiral's home last fall in one amazing communal weekend of effort and love. This past week, we provided food for the workers at Eastside Heart and Home, and volunteered our sweat equity to help provide a home for those in the community with great need. Sister Marianne and her Dominican sisters work so very hard to ensure that those in their community get all of those basic needs met. One thing we know from both psychological and sociological perspectives is that one can't even begin to thrive academically or socially when our most basic needs of health, safety, and subsistence are not being met. The movement Black Lives Matter says all lives matter. All lives have dignity. Our proximity to Ferguson and the impact those events have had on our own community members illustrate how important it is to honor everyone's dignity and worth. So much of the rhetoric around programs like our Fourth Saturday Lunch and the Returning Prisoners Program and the community projects like Eastside Heart and Home or even Habitat for Humanity argues that those people are lazy and they're just looking for a handout, or they're not deserving because they're being punished for some sort of past indiscretion. But Maslow would argue otherwise. When people don't have their basic fundamental needs met, they become desperate and live in an environment of scarcity, which can unfortunately lead to socially unacceptable behaviors. Who in their right mind wouldn't work hard to do whatever it takes to survive? And sometimes those efforts are misdirected, but when we ignore our neighbors and leave their needs to flounder, the survival instinct kicks in hard and people will do whatever it takes to survive. Our work in these areas reinforce that all people have inherent worth and dignity, period. When we consider Maslow's third level, love and belongingness, and that's pretty much standing on the side of love. All kinds of love, all orientations, all races, all people are deserving of love and connection and community. We march in pride parades. We hang out at Camp Fest, 8 days, Camp Fest coming up. And we reach out and help out our friends when needed. When I needed help moving tables and chairs to my house for Margaret's graduation party last weekend, Phil Embry offered to help without question. That's community. That is who we are and what we desperately need as a community. Even the last two levels of Maslow resonate with our first principle. We can't develop our self-esteem and reach our full actualized potential unless we believe in our own self-worth and work hard to lift up others who struggle. We have to meet these needs to ensure everyone's worth and dignity so everyone ultimately can thrive in the community, everyone. Principle number two, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. And as the kids say, be kind in all you do. Being kind in all we do, working towards justice, equity, and compassion for all also resonates across all the levels. Looking for justice for those who have less, who are in need, helping those returning from prisons to find jobs and a place to belong, respecting others and accepting others to build our own and others' esteem, and accepting others' paths and working with a strong moral compass enables us and others to reach their full potential as well. Number three. Acceptance of one another and encouragement for spiritual growth in our congregation. And as the kids say, we're free to learn together. Acceptance of and encouragement towards others really maps to the top three levels, the belongingness, the esteem, the self-actualization. We give space to others to be their own unique selves. We accept all families. We work hard to connect where we have common ground and seek to learn and grow where we differ. We accept everyone's journeys for truth, wherever that truth is for them. And that leads us then to the fourth principle, which is a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. We're all responsible for our own journey and our own truth. But if we don't allow people the space to do that for themselves, we stunt their ability to build community and to believe in themselves or even to fully reach their own potential. We do, as Unitarians and as people here at First UU, we respect each other's journey, their personal journey, and that path, because that pathway gives us a way to make sure everybody's needs are met. Number five, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregation, in society at large. As the kids would say, all people need a voice. Giving everyone a voice not only creates connection, but also shows our respect for differences and enables us to learn from others. Again, the higher order needs of belonging and esteem and actualization can't exist without everyone's voice at the table, because we need to build community, build respect, and create space for individual paths in order for us to achieve the purpose in our own lives. The goal of world liberty with peace, the world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, building a fair and peaceful world. Again, peace, liberty, justice, all values that are reinforced by addressing all of Maslow's needs from top to bottom. From Mona Hebert's work collecting shoes and providing for clean water, to Ron Glossop's work spreading goodwill through Esperanto, to bridge barriers of language and culture, we recognize we are global citizens with a duty to ensure no one is hungry or lacks food or clean water or clothing or a safe and welcoming community. UUs always seem to be at the center of global social justice work, advocating for peace and fairness in the essentials so that there's a level playing field for all to participate in the global economy so that they can have what they need. Global greed and war and oppression and genocide, all that we resist at the core of our values, are the direct result of ignoring another's needs and values as a human being. Greed, the act of excessive wants, drives war and oppression and genocide. When we focus on needs over wants, no one is hungry, everyone is safe, and everyone reaches their full potential. Number seven, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part, or we care for the earth. So caring for the earth and understanding that we are nature and nature is us is central to physiological safety and belonging needs. The great care we give to Mother Earth rewards us with food, water, and fresh air. The interconnectedness that unites all of us gives us stability and connection. We belong to each other and to the universe. We celebrate solstice, we teach our children about nature, and we spend our summers at Pere Marquette State Park. Our interdependence with nature requires us to care for the planet, and by caring for the planet, we can ensure all people have their basic existence needs met. So what does this all mean? Our principles, the values that we hold near and dear to us, are not dogma. but they're about meeting ours and others' essential needs, the needs of each one of us, the needs of others, the needs of Mother Earth, and the needs of the universe. When I asked that question, what do we need right now? What I realized is that we need each other and we need Unitarian Universalism. Here is where our needs, all of our needs, will be met because of a loving kindness each one of us brings to the table. There's something special that brings us all here together and to the UU faith. We need each other and we need what the UU traditions bring to our lives and to the lives of others. Regardless of where our journey brings us as a community, we can't be afraid to look to each other and to focus on each other's needs. We can't be afraid to continue to work our principles, not just for what it does for us, but what it does for others. The essence of UU values are about being present, giving to others, valuing all, and ensuring justice and fairness makes room on a planet for all to have their needs met. My sister posted a photo message on her Facebook wall yesterday, and it was a little strip of photos illustrating a conversation between a little girl and her father. And the dialogue went like this. The little girl says, "Why does she get one and not me? It's not fair." And you know, when I teach my students about equity theory and this idea of what's fair, I said even a two-year-old knows what's fair and what's not fair, at least in their own mind's eye. So this is not an uncommon conversation you have with anybody. What is fair? And the father responds, "You're not going to get the same things as other people. It's never going to be equal. It's not going to happen ever in your life, so you must learn that now. The only time you should look in your neighbor's bowl is to make sure that they have enough. You don't look in your neighbor's bowl to see if you have as much as them." And that, my friends, is really the essence of what we do as UUs and how we can focus on ours and others' needs. Wants lead to attachment and pain. When we all worry about others' needs rather than our wants, we'll all truly have what we need and perhaps even more than what we need. I need first you. I need all of you. This special place fills my heart and my soul and gives me a place to feel loved and accepted and gives me a place to build community and enabled me to give to those whose needs are greater than my own. But it's important that we apply our mission not just to the greater community of those in need, but to ourselves here within this community. No matter where First UU wanders over the next few years, we're connected, and we are what makes this place special. It's not the building. It's not necessarily the principles, although those are what kind of bring us here. But the principles aren't what make us special. It's each of us in this community and how we connect and support each other's needs at all levels of the hierarchy that makes this place, incredibly special. I said the sermon wasn't going to be about change, but I guess it sort of is. Sorry. We're all having to learn a hard lesson about attachment to our past and the way things were. As the Buddha says, when we're attached to that and we cling to it, as you heard in our reading today, this is where the pain comes in. We then miss the joy in each and every moment when we cling to what we want and not to what we have and what we need. This is a journey, and we're all on a different place in that journey. But we must be gentle with ourselves and each other, because fundamentally the work that we do here and the love that we give to each other unconditionally will ensure our needs are met. It's scary to let go of our wants, but if we fundamentally focus on ours and others' needs, our need for physiological sustenance, our need for safety, our need for belongingness, our need for esteem and self-actualization, we'll find abundance, I can guarantee it. I'm honored and humbled to represent your needs, you know, as we begin our ministerial search. So tell me and others what you need fundamentally. Need. And then, of course, as those of you who are of the age to, like the ancient philosophers called the Rolling Stones, you can't always get what you want, but if you try, you might get what you need. Absolutely. My sister-in-law went to see them last night in Columbus, Ohio, and I said, be careful they don't have a heart attack on stage, because they're pretty old. Anyway, so thank you. We have a closing hymn, my dear? All right. Please rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing the hymn, "May Your Life Be a Song," number 1059. Sorry, it's not the Rolling Stones. Benediction today, a reading from the Daily Om. Our lives are rich with potential sources of happiness, but sometimes we become victims of negative thinking because we believe that focusing on all that has gone wrong will provide us with the motivation we need to face the challenges of survival. When we choose to focus on what makes us happy, however, a shift occurs in the fabric of our existence. Finding something to be happy about every single day can help this shift take place. The vantage points from which we view the world are brought into balance, and we can see that being alive truly is a gift to be savored. There's always something we can be happy about. It is simply up to us to identify it. On one day, we may find happiness in a momentous, life-changing event, such as a marriage or the birth of a child. On another day, the happiness we experience may be a product of our appreciation of a particularly well-brewed cup of tea or the way the sun shines on a leaf. If we discover that we literally cannot call to mind a single joyful element of existence, we should examine the cause of the blockage standing between us and experiencing happiness. Keeping a happiness journal is a wonderful way to catalog the happiness unfolding all around us, so that joy has myriad opportunities to manifest itself in our lives. Writing about the emotions we experience while contemplating joy may give us insight into the factors compelling us to resist it. Happiness may not always come easily into your life. You have likely been conditioned to believe that the proper response to unmet expectation is one of sadness, anger, guilt, or fear. To make joy a fixture in your existence, you must first accept that it is within your power to choose happiness over unhappiness every single day. And each time you discover some new source of happiness, the notion that the world is a happy place will find its way more deeply into your heart. On this day, find one thing to be happy about and let it fill your heart. Walk gently and have a beautiful day.